I'm going to talk a little bit about the secrets of the Ice Age and how that actually fits in with the Bible. A lot of people wonder, you know, was there really an Ice Age? Because 200 years ago, nobody believed in an Ice Age. There was no data at all to support an Ice Age. People thought the scientists that are coming up with the idea of an Ice Age, they thought that was really odd. But they looked around, the data does support an Ice Age. But the Ice Age actually fits, of course, in the Bible's timeline, as we're going to see. We talk about this, when I've come before, I've talked about these same verses in 2 Peter. 2 Peter 3, it talks about in the last days there'll be scoffers. People coming and scoffing at God's word. When you go to science classes and colleges today, they scoff at God's word. You know, they just assume that's just nonsense. But actually, God's word is truth. That's the only truth we have. I heard the Sunday school lesson today, and I've asked college students, what is truth? And I teach at a Christian college part-time now, and they actually don't even get it right most of the time until I tell them the only thing that's truth is God's word. Science is not truth. Science has a lot of facts, but then it's how it's interpreted, and that's the problem. And most scientists scoff at the idea of a recent ice age. The Bible talks about the genealogies in the first few chapters of Genesis. It talks about the genealogy showing the earth is only thousands of years old. So the Ice Age has to fit in that same time frame, only being thousands of years old. And so the Ice Age wasn't that long ago. And we still see remnants of the Ice Age on Greenland and in Antarctica today. So in some ways, we're still in the Ice Age. And there's been global warming ever since. And so when you get all hung up about global warming and climate change, well, it's been climate changing since the Ice Age. And the Ice Age was an integral part of the ending of the flood, as we'll see later. There's those two worldviews we talked about last time I was here. There's the secular worldview of uniformitarianism, where they look at the measurements and the rates they see going on today, and they don't consider catastrophic events in those viewpoints. They don't consider major rainfall events. They don't consider the year-long flood event that really happened. They don't believe that. And my research is showing more and more as I plot the sediments across the continents I talked about last time, showing that there was a global flood. That the sediments do, in fact, show the Bible is true. And so today we're going to talk about the end of this a little bit. So man's got his philosophy, his and her philosophy. Everything continues as it always has. And this is predicted in the Bible as well. And they call that uniformitarianism, or the present is the key to the past. But you can't measure today's rates and look back at what the Bible talks about as a flood. You can't look at today's rates and look back and see the Ice Age. God tells us his word is truth. He says in 6 days the Lord made the heaven, the earth, the sea, and all that is in them, and rested the seventh day. That's, again, the Ten Commandments. God wrote that with his own hand. So it talks about 6 literal days. And so at ICR, we don't have a problem with the 6 literal days. We don't have a problem with the earth being 6,000 years old. We don't have a problem with the Ice Age being about 4,500 years ago, around 4,000 years ago, not 10,000 years ago, or 40,000 years ago, or longer than that, or even a few million years ago. We believe it all takes place in the time frame of the Bible, just as described in Genesis. So today we're going to look at 3 points in the next 30 or so minutes, trying to reveal some of the secrets of the Ice Age. And the first one is, how do we know there was an Ice Age? As I mentioned in my kind of long drawn-out introduction, we didn't really believe there was an Ice Age as scientists until the last 150 years or so. But we started looking at the data and the evidence. There actually is evidence to back this up, and then we're going to look at what caused the Ice Age. And today I study with my grandchildren, so I had some of these movies. Anybody watch these movies? They may not be quite right, but there was an Ice Age. We're going to look at what caused the Ice Age, a little bit about the scientific causes of it, and explain it in a biblical time frame as well. And then we'll look at the biblical reason for the Ice Age. There was a reason for it. It didn't just happen. Things in Earth's history don't just happen. God has a plan. And that's what we're going to conclude with. There was a plan for the Ice Age. A very essential part of the end of the flood was the Ice Age. So last time I talked about the flood, some of you were here, you suffered through that talk. Who suffered through that talk, some of you? And this time we're going to talk about the end, because it's important to end things. God had a plan. So there was an Ice Age. And this is what we've mapped out as scientists. We've mapped out that white area. You can see the extent of the Ice Age across the northern latitudes. It covered Greenland, which is still there today. It covered a lot of North America all the way down to Kansas and places. And it kind of came and went a little bit. It fluctuated. So the secular scientists believe there are more than one Ice Age. But we believe there was just one Ice Age. The evidence really backs just one major event that kind of moved and advanced and kind of melted back and advanced and melted back. So there really was an Ice Age. The Great Lakes themselves, 4 of them at least, were carved by the Ice Age. by the glaciers that came down. So when you go to Lake Michigan, Lake Huron, Lake Ontario, Lake Erie, those lakes are all carved pretty much by the ice age, by the ice that moved across during the ice age at the end of the flood. So the sediments were laid down, and then the ice came in very quickly within a few hundred years. Now, Lake Superior is a little bit different story, but it was also influenced by the ice age greatly. So we're going to do a brief history of the ice age. Here's some diagrams from a former DNR publication here at the state of Michigan. And you can see these big lobes of ice came down, and most of those major lobes carved out are lakes. And it melted back to a lake level that scientists have identified as Lake Algonquin level. And you can see the evidence of that as you drive around Michigan, especially as you go north of here. As you go north, you see where the lake levels were, and the land actually rose and rebounded, we call it, from the weight of the ice. And you can see these levels and terraces up by Taos. There's a drop-off as you drive by Taos. That's one of the lake levels. As you drive further north to the Sleeping Bear Sand Dunes, it rises hundreds of feet. That's because the land rose hundreds of feet from the weight of the ice as it came back up, and you can see these lake levels. So Lake Algonquin was one of the highest levels as the light ice started to melt off. So it melted back a little bit, and then it actually carved as it allowed the water to drain off. It actually carved through, making the Straits of Mackinac. You wonder why they built the Mackinac Bridge. Why didn't they just build a causeway? There's a big canyon down the middle of the straits, as they call it, as they see, right down the middle, hundreds of feet deep. So they had to build the suspension bridge straddling that big canyon, like we see here. So it's straddling that big straits that carved out as the ice waters were fluctuating, the levels of the ice were melting back, land was rising, water was tilting back and forth, just like in a big tilted, you know, if you have a big bucket of water tilting it back and forth. And then you go to the more recent level, the Nipissing level, as it's called. This was still a little bit higher than today's levels. You can see the levels flooded back up in the lakes. This area was underwater during the Nipissing time, depositing all the clay that's underground here up for about 50 feet. That's ultimately why Dow came here, because you could drill here and get pretty tasty water at a very shallow depth. And part of that's because the clay that was deposited during the Nipissing lake level for hundreds of years, this lake level survived. And we see the evidence of that on Mackinac Island. I was just up there yesterday. You can drive around and see these cliffs around the edges. The Nipissing level is that outer cliff where the Grand Hotel is on and the Ford is on. And you can see the cliff level here up at Mission Point. If you look on the far right-hand side, just kind of see that little cliff level. I'll go back and you can see it again. See that cliff that was carved by the water when the water level was higher? Now the water's down where it is today. And you can see that again. The Grand Hotel is built on that level. The fort is built on that level. It kind of goes up about 50, 60 feet. So that's one of those lake levels you can follow it around the island. And then you can go to northern Michigan, north of here, up by Mansalona and Ellsworth, and you can see these Drumlin fields. Underneath the glacier, scientists still are trying to figure out how drumlins form, but they form underneath glaciers, best we can tell. They form these long linear patterns that shows us the direction of the movement of the glaciers. And even our smaller lakes up in this area are carved by the direction. You can kind of see the directional pattern going through. You can see gouges in the rocks. In the upper peninsula, the lower peninsula, you can go see scratches and gouges. You can see where rocks in the bottom of the ice gouged away on the surface of the geology and left behind remnants, erratics we call them. Rocks that come from Canada, come from other places that just show up in our fields. We get Petoskey stones here because they come from Alpena and Petoskey, but they were moved down by the glaciers. So they're rounded a little bit and transported in the process, but these erratics, these strange rocks just show up all over. And that was further evidence that there was an ice age at some point. And we can actually map up the moraines. My colleague Dave Williams, he could do more of this if he wanted to. He's in the audience today. I taught geography at Delta for many, many years and taught a lot about the ice age. But here you can see the moraine maps, and these moraines actually show up. If you go up to Mansalona area, you can see this is a Google Earth map. You can see this cliff, this that you ski on a lot around Boyne Falls. These are actually moraines where the glaciers dumped a lot of material. As the ice kind of stopped for a while, they just kept dumping material. It makes big linear hills and cliffs. You can kind of see the base of that cliff I diagrammed out there in red. So these moraines are evidence of an ice age as well. Then you can go right here in Midland. I don't know if it's open yet again. The Center for the Arts. You can see your state fossil, the mastodon, in the Center for the Arts Museum. That's our state fossil. There's so many mastodons that lived during the ice age here in Michigan. So there really was an ice age. There's evidence in Michigan particularly and other states in the north, New York as well, the Finger Lakes. Long Island even is a big moraine. All these areas are influenced heavily by the ice. But what caused the ice age? Secular science believes it has to do with Milankovitch theory, or astronomical theory, tilt of the Earth and the fluctuating tilt and all these different things, but it really never explains it very well. But what's the biblical explanation? Let's look at what we need to get an ice age. Let's go back a step. There's two main things you need to go into an ice age. You need cooler summers, so you don't melt all the snow back, and then you need heavier snowfall. And the flood provided both of these things, as we'll see in a minute. So you need to keep snow around from year to year, and that's the start of an ice age. And over the next few hundred years, you can start building up more and more snow, and snow makes ice. As you pack it down, it becomes ice. And so how you build up ice is you got to start with snow. So cooler summers are caused by volcanic eruptions. Volcanic eruptions send a lot of aerosols and dust and particles up into the atmosphere. When Mount St. Helens erupted, it cooled the global temperatures for several years. Every major eruption that puts a lot of ash in the sky will actually cool the Earth's temperatures. So if you get enough of these going off, you can reverse global warming. And that's exactly what happened at the end of the flood. The solar radiation then comes down hitting the Earth and it gets bounced away before it hits the Earth. And it makes things a little, you don't really notice it as humans because there's very small particles up there. But it might give you a little better sunsets, a little prettier sunrises. But ultimately, it blocks out a small amount of solar radiation. That little blockage causes global cooling. And so here's a few examples of these global coolings. Tambora was a huge eruption in Indonesia area in 1816. It was known as the year without a summer in Europe, where it never warmed up. It was cold year-round. Krakatoa happened in the late 19th century. The whole island in Indonesia blew up and cooled the Earth as much as 1.2 degrees Celsius, a couple degrees Fahrenheit for you and me. And then Mount Pinatubo, 1991, the most recent ash-rich eruption, cooled the Earth for a couple of years afterwards in 92 and 93. I remember at Western Michigan, when I was a graduate student down there, it was 35 degrees below zero in 1993. Kalamazoo doesn't normally get 35 degrees below zero. But it did those years because of the global cooling effect of one volcano. What if you have a bunch of volcanoes going off at once, like the volcanoes at Yellowstone, the supervolcano, and a whole bunch more? And that's exactly what we see when I plot up the data. Across the world, I see all the volcanoes peaked at the end of the flood. And these are some of the ash piles they can map out, scientists have mapped out from some of these major eruptions. The Yellowstone eruptions in blue and places like that all the way around here. And what we see from Mount St. Helens is this little red one. And we think, you know, those of us that remember Mount St. Helens, we think, well, that was a big disaster. But it was hardly anything compared to these other eruptions that were taking place at the end of the flood. So we had this tremendous volcanic activity, not just in the U.S., but all over the world. And I plot up the volcanic activity. I see the volcanic activity peaks at the end of the flood. And if you have any questions on that, I can give you more data on that, but I skipped it for the talk. But what we really see is this. Thousands of years ago, when the flood ended, about 4,500 years ago, according to the Bible, we had what appears to be a tremendous amount of volcanic activity. Not just a single volcano, but hundreds of volcanoes going off in the Andes, in North America, Asia, everywhere around the world. There's a lot of effects going on all at once. And so you have this tremendous amount of aerosols going up, cooling the Earth's climate. So when Noah got off the ark for the next few hundred years, the climate was much cooler, especially in the north. God had the ark land in a more temperate climate around Turkey in the Middle East, so they really weren't seeing the ice there at that point. But if they went further north into Europe, they would have saw the ice. It was affecting the European continent, just like it was affecting North America. But the ice age actually did dwindle off with time, and eventually we're cooling now. We've warmed up, so most of the ice has melted back. There's a lot of volcanic activity that cooled the Earth for hundreds of years after the flood. So all we need, again, is cooler summers. Keeps the snow from melting. That's how you build up ice. And so people have done a lot of modeling. We had a meteorologist, Mike Ord. He modeled a lot of this for the government. He was a government meteorologist for many years. He modeled how long would it take to build up ice sheets that were a mile thick like we had here in Michigan. How long would it take? And he figured it would take just a few hundred years. He estimated about 500 years you'd probably reach the maximum ice sheets. And then we can melt off in 100 years. So the ice kind of came and went much quicker than scientists tell you. The ice builds up, primarily because of cooling effects of the volcanoes. The volcanoes themselves, really, at the end of the flood, were an integral part to cause the ice age. And to get the snow that you need to make ice, you need a lot of evaporation. Evaporation from the ocean. Most of our water today, our rain, comes from the oceans, even here in Midland. It doesn't come from the Great Lakes. Very little water comes from the Great Lakes that comes down as rain. Most of that comes from, when you get the lake effect snow, that's just a temperature thing. Most of the moisture in the air actually comes from the oceans. They can model that with isotopes and figure which ocean it came from. So the world is supplied with water, the hydrologic cycle, through the oceans. So how do you get more evaporation? Well, you heat the oceans. So if you heat the oceans, you're going to get a lot more precipitation. And if the Earth's cooler, it's going to come down as snow. And that's what you see in the northern part of the Earth at the end of the Ice Age, or at the end of the Flood. How do you heat the oceans? Well, we talked about last time, the rapid movements of the Earth's plates made a whole new ocean. So all these areas in red, that's all that new ocean that formed during the Flood. So the year of the Flood, you have this runaway subduction we talked about a little bit, I think, last time. As you drop the subducted slab in, it's not going to go real slow like we see today. It's going to go real fast. And the physics and the chemistry behind that actually shows it will happen very, very quickly. It's not going to move slow like today. And it moved really, really quickly during the floods, separated the continents, and made a whole new ocean floor. The whole new ocean floor is made out of lava. You can go down there and test it today. It's made out of basalt, a very dark type of lava made of iron and magnesium. But all that heat from that new lava across 70% of the Earth warmed the water considerably. And as the water was warmed, warmer water causes more evaporation. As you get closer to boiling point, that water is going to evaporate even faster. So you have a lot of evaporation coming off at the end of the flood. And then the Earth is being cooled in the northern and southernmost climates because of the volcanic activity. You've got the setup for the perfect ice age. Not the perfect storm, the perfect ice age that lasted for hundreds of years. So until the ocean temperatures cooled, and this is some of the modeling they did, you can see the temperatures might have been 20 degrees Celsius warmer at the end of the flood, and it dropped quickly within 1,000 years. But we believe the ice age probably reached its maximum at about 500 years after the flood. So this would be only about 4,000 years ago. Wasn't that long ago that you had the ice here? We still see the ice in Greenland. We still see the ice in Antarctica. So as the ocean temperatures cool, you kind of cut off that evaporation, and the snow stopped. And as the volcanoes slowed down, you stop cooling the Earth, and eventually everything kind of worked together, and we kind of get to the climate we have today. But thousands of years ago, the climate of the Middle East was much different. When Moses went to the Middle East, it was a land flowing with milk and honey, because the climate was completely affected by this recent ice age that just ended. So things are much, much different in the past. It wasn't always dry and desolate like we see today in the Middle East. So let's move on to the biblical reason. Some of you are wondering, okay, there was an ice age, so what? So maybe there was some effect from the flood that caused the ice age. Well, the secular scientists still can't figure out why there was an ice age. They keep saying there's a bunch of them, but they still don't have a really good reason. The Bible still provides the best reason for the ice age, the flood, the heating of the ocean's water, and the volcanic activity at the end of the flood. But what was the biblical reason? Why would God even have an ice age happen? There only was one ice age. It just kind of advanced a little bit a few times, and they try to say there was four different ones here, and there's really one. He figures about, they reached the maximum might have been about 500 years after the flood. So you're looking at maybe about the time of Abraham, time of Job, 2000 BC or so is when the ice age really was at its maximum. And if you look in the book of Job, and you read through the book of Job, you see more references to snow and ice than any other book of the Bible. One of the oldest books of the Bible has got the most references to snow and ice. Now, Job was living in the Middle East, so he wasn't living in the glaciers, but he probably heard about the glaciers and saw the snow. You know, if he traveled north, he would have seen more of the effects of the ice age firsthand. But he does reference a lot about snow and ice. And so here's kind of a couple of complicated diagrams that are going in different directions. This is the ocean temperature diagram, again, dropping from 20 or 30 degrees C. Here's the glacial maximum right here. As the ocean temperatures are dropping and the volcanic activity is dropping, you know, you reach a maximum here about 500 years in from the cooling effects and the snow before the oceans cooled off.
And in the process, she built up a lot of ice. And so the ice sea level actually dropped
even lower than it is today.
And you can see the drop of sea level.
You can see they keep finding people and civilizations between England and France. They call it Doggerland. People were living there thousands of years ago. And then the water came up and flooded them out. So people worry about the flooding today, but most of Florida is already flooded. If you look at the continental shelf, it's already underwater. Because most of the melting already took place when the ice melted. It actually sealed and did rise. So what happens here is the temperature is cooled. The Tower of Babel is right about here, maybe somewhere in the middle, around 200 years after the flood. Why is that important? So you guys still look as confused as my college students. We're getting there. Here's the Tower of Babel. Tower of Babel probably not being affected by the ice. The ice is all up here. But there's a lot of climate effects down here. That's why Egypt was probably much wetter. There was no desert across probably most of North Africa at this time. The Sahara wasn't really a desert yet. It was very wet. And they find rivers today flowing underneath the sand. They can see evidence of a past climate. If you look at the Tower of Babel, where it was situated, not too far south from where the Ark landed up here, was somewhere around Turkey. And they moved south, and people were just staying here with King Nimrod, or Nimrod. They were disobeying God's command. He told them to spread out. He said, go fill the earth. And they didn't. They were staying in the Middle East. The animals were spreading out. And what were the humans doing? Again, they were sticking around, building their big temples. This is a secular ages. Don't necessarily believe the ages, but the secular world actually believes the spreading of a lot of animals took place about from the same idea. And to me, it's amazing. Here's the Tower of Babel. And look at all these routes. Today, what they see for animals and humans is almost identical to what the Bible tells us. They just got the years off a little bit. But to me, this is compelling. It shows exactly what the routes would be. All coming from the same area. Going this way and that way. How is God going to get the animals back to these continents now if they're separated by water? How is God going to get people back to the Americas when the Ark lands in Turkey? In the pre-flood world, there probably was one big supercontinent. But in the post-flood world, now you've got the continents all separated. How are you going to get them back? Well, God had a plan to get them back because he lowered sea level by the Ice Age. So the Ice Age sucked up so much water into snow and ice that it dropped sea level hundreds of feet. And as sea level dropped hundreds of feet, it opened up the Bering Seaway. It opened up all this land. All that yellow was land. Chesapeake Bay was a river. It's a bay now because it flooded as the sea level rose, as the ice melted, all this stuff came back. So for a time, for hundreds of years after the flood, you would have land bridges to go from continent to continent. So you could walk from Asia over here to North America. And that's exactly what the secular scientists say. Humans came across this way. They'll tell you tens of thousands of years ago that the route is the same. We just think it happened around 4,000 years ago. But humans weren't moving. They were staying around the Tower of Babel and disobeying. So if you reveal the answers to the Ice Age, really the scientific evidence tells us there was an Ice Age. There's no doubt about that. The Ice Age was caused by the flood, the effects of the heated oceans from all that new ocean crust. And then you have the effects of all the volcanic activity that peaked at the end of the flood. Like Mount St. Helens was a similar type of volcanic activity like Mount St. Helens, but a whole bunch of those all at once, cooling the earth, causing more evaporation. And then ultimately, we get the Ice Age. The Ice Age was necessary for dispersal. To get animals back to all these continents, how are you going to get them back? God had a plan all along. So he's going to flood the earth, destroy everything, but then he had a plan to get everything back to these separated continents. You separate the continents, you got to get them back. Does anybody think about these things besides me? How do you get them back? Well, the Ice Age provides the perfect answer. Lower sea level temporarily to allow the animals to get back. But it was only temporary. And that's what you got to remember. That's why at the Tower of Babel, when humans were disobeying and not moving out, they were going to miss that window of opportunity. So God had to step in, and what did he do? He had to confound the languages. He had to actually step in because the humans were disobeying like we do. We like to disobey. You know, that's what the Bible tells us again and again and again. Guys, God gives second and third and fourth and fifth chances over and over and over to the Israelites, to us, to you and me. And he gave the world a second chance as well. He flooded everything, destroyed it all, said, let's start it over. We'll take Noah and his family, we'll take two of every kind, and we'll start over. But he had to be able to get them back. And so the animals were going back, and the humans were still staying around the one area, so he had to step in there and kind of spread them out. The timing is just perfect. Tower of Babel came along, humans were kind of dogging it, so to speak, and they only had so many hundreds of years, so many generations to spread out from that location to get across the Bering Sea. We go back a little bit to the Bering Sea. There's only so much time to get across there before that waterway was going to flood again. Today you can't walk to Russia. Maybe Sarah Palin can see Russia, but you can't walk to Russia today. You know, you could walk from Russia over here during the Ice Age, but you can't now. So ultimately, what was necessary for us for the dispersal of not only animals, but also humans. Now, you might be saying, well, humans can build boats. But, you know, it's a lot easier to walk. If you can walk somewhere, drive somewhere, you know, you can get over there. You follow the animals. But, you know, the animals, like elephants and giraffes and horses, it's very difficult for them to get back places, trying to float on logs and things like that across the oceans. But if you can walk there, it's much easier. So God had a plan all along. He said in Isaiah 55, 8 to 9, he said, for my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways, saith the Lord. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts. So we're just trying to catch up to some of the things that God already did for us. He laid out this ice age. We see the effects here in Michigan every day as you drive around Mancelona, as you drive around northern Michigan, as you go to Mackinac Island. I know some of you have been up there. I think you were there yesterday. It was pretty crowded. And so you can see the effects of the ice age even on that island where the lake levels were different, carving these terraces, these lake terraces. As you drive around, think about the ice age, but the ice age was essential because it provided a way for the animals to get back to those continents. So if you separate the continents, you've got to have a plan. God had a plan. He was way ahead of us, as always. God also had a plan for us. He knew when he created Adam and Eve was going to sin. He knew we were going to sin. But he provided an out. It says in Romans 5:12, by, you know, one man brought death and sin into the earth. So the plan to bring us back into righteousness with God, to favor with God, was to, for God himself to come to earth in the form of a human. Shed his blood for the forgiveness of our sins. And finish it once and for all. We sang about the song today. It's over. It's finished. God did it. He followed through on his plan. So we had sin, and then we had the perfect Savior. God had all that planned as well. God has a plan for you and for each and every one of us. Romans 5:8-9, it says, but God commandeth his love toward us, in that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. He didn't have to do this. He created everything. He's the creator, as well as our source of salvation. But much more than being now justified by his blood, we shall be saved from wrath through him. So we are justified and saved by his blood, by his shed blood on the cross. So God had a plan, Alan, for the to have an ice age to get the animals back, but he had a plan for our salvation. He cared about each and every one of us enough that he has a plan for each and every one of us. Some of us, like me, maybe don't recognize that plan until later in life, but God has a plan for every one of us. He had a plan for Moses. Moses really didn't get going until he was 80 years old. So my Uncle Earl's here today, 99. I don't know where he's at. Where's my Uncle Earl? Is he back there somewhere? Hiding in the back corner? But he's going to be 99 here, I think, later this month. And so I had to come by and see him. It's great to see him again. But he has a plan for my Uncle Earl. He has a plan for each and every one of us. And you just got to listen to the call. In the back, we have some free books that I want you guys to give away. If you're interested in the Ice Age and a little bit about the evidence of the Ice Age, and this book actually is totally free. There's some other free handouts we have for you, written by my colleague, Jake Hebert. And he gets into the age of the Ice Age and how it's only thousands of years ago, not millions of years ago. How it's only, you know, a few thousand years ago and not millions. He talks about the ice cores and how those are fraught with assumptions. And so if you really want to read more about it, it's written by a PhD physics guy who studied climates. He kind of studied climatology for his PhD in physics. And it's a little more detailed, but if you're really into details, because you guys are the chemical city, you guys are into the details, he gets into some of the details in this as well. And one thing I always forget to mention, if you haven't signed up for our free monthly mailer, there's sign-up sheets in the back. You know, this is totally free. This is totally free. This is totally free. You can sign up every month. Some of you probably signed up in the last couple of times I've been here, but go ahead and feel free to sign up for that. You can do it also on email. You don't have to get it mailed to your house. But it's kind of nice to have a little magazine come every month for free. And even if you don't ever send us a dime, enough people do that, you know, we can still provide that, so we don't have to worry about it. You don't have to pay for a subscription or anything. We'll never sell your name to anybody else. You know, it's all internal at the Institute for Creation Research. That's the one book I talked about last time. I think we ran out of. They didn't send enough of these. So we have, I think, about 10 or 15 of these available in the back. If your kids are going to college or are in college or in high school, going to public schools or even a lot of Christian schools, a lot of Christian schools don't teach God's Word as truth. And maybe you're finding this out. And a lot of our children are walking away from the Bible, walking away from church. You know, they blame it on, oh, they're busy, they're too busy, they're too busy. Well, a lot of it's because of what they're being taught in school. They're being taught that the secular story. They're being taught that, you know, all those stories I learned about growing up here in Calvary Baptist aren't really true. And they have no recourse. You know, they're not hearing the other side. Well, this provides the other side. This talks about why the earth is only thousands of years old. The science actually backs that up. It talks about astronomy. It talks about biology. It talks about geology. It talks about dinosaurs. It's got a little bit of everything in here. I know some of you bought these last time. But these are the best resource we have, cheapest price we have. If you don't buy anything else, I would buy one of these. Even if your children don't read it, you need to read it so you understand what's going on, what they're learning. And you can counter when they come back and say, well, I learned Earth's billions of years old. You'll learn that here in the high school classes at Midland High and Dow High. Earth's 4.55 billion years old. But really, it's not. Those are all based on a lot of assumptions that can't be verified. But yet, if they have enough people saying it, like C.S. Lewis says, you spread enough half-truths, and that truth becomes real. But yet, that's like saying, you know, negative numbers, you add enough together, you're going to get a positive number. It doesn't add up. So this is a new book that just came out since the last time I was here. It's the book, I actually reviewed it, I didn't write it, but it's a really good book for about fourth grade level, kids book. I think it's available for like $9. It's really well illustrated by one of our graphic artists. She actually did these watercolors of these dinosaurs. If you got kids, you got grandkids, this will be a great little dinosaur book. They'll love it. And they'll learn that the Bible is true in the process. I've learned about dinosaurs. Dinosaurs are a great way to learn. So if you want a kind of a children's book, we have some of these available in the back as well. Again, these are, I think, are $9 as you go along. And then I have a few of these that some of you didn't have enough money last time because our credit card machine never works here at Calvary Baptist. So we just decided to go with cash only or checks. But I have a few of these, and I'll sign these in the back. This is the one book I wrote a couple years ago, The Real Dinosaur Story. This also talks about how dinosaurs are not that old. And even in the creation ministries, like Answers in Genesis, some of you heard of Answers in Genesis? Ken Ham's group, he used to work for us before he went on his own. But I was just down there in his offices a few weeks ago. We were talking about, do dinosaurs really have feathers? And we decided, no. Those are birds and not dinosaurs. And there's different, you know, parts of the anatomy to show that those were not birds, or those are birds and not dinosaurs. And so I discuss a little bit of it in this book. And I was glad to know that I was right. I was like, whew, that was close. Because there are some people out there, creationists, that are saying dinosaurs had feathers. And there's not one bit of evidence that dinosaurs had feathers. And I talk a little bit about that in this book as well. But there's a lot more information on our website. You can always go to our website, icr.org. And do searches by subjects and things. And the same thing is true of AIG. They're a good ministry as well. And so we actually agreed 100% our ministry, their ministry. And they actually sell my book in his bookstore. And inside of his ark, you can actually go find this as well. And so Ken Ham's organization, our organization, You know, we're a little bit different emphasis. We try to do a little more science. Our scientists are doing a little more research, but we're very, very similar in what we believe, and it's nice to know that.